This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast. So, what's on the docket for today?
Shiva, it's been a long, long week, and there's so much to talk about, bud. So, I mean, we'll try to touch on a couple of things and kind of see where we go from. But I think on top of our list, we got really, you know, we want to talk about Babook ransomware. We want to talk about DC cybersecurity, what we've learned so far about that and what may be going on around that. If we have time, we can go into QtLocker and we can get into DarkSide and what they're doing with the stock market and see what else is out there about zero trust that we can touch about today.
Sounds good. I also wanted to discuss Password State and their supply chain breach, because what's a podcast these days without some cybersecurity supply chain failures?
Well, take it away. Let's start talking about some Password State.
So what was it? 2 weeks ago, Password State announced that their code was basically hijacked and turned into a rat, which gave the malicious actors the ability to go into on-premise Password State databases and pull out all of their passwords. Where it got worse, and they have 29,000 companies that using them supposedly. Where it gets worse is that the bad actors, once they were found out, they killed their command and control servers and started sending phishing emails to customers to reinstall a further compromised copy of the software, even though Password State issued a patch. What are your thoughts on that?
So they sent an email to registered users to do a reinstall? Is that correct?
After Password State updated the software to remove any malicious actors. To get back into the systems, the bad guys sent out the phishing emails impersonating Password State saying, hey, here's our newest update. You need to install this to be safe, when it's really just another version of the rat.
You know, that always, there's so many different ways that we can go onto that, because at that moment, who do you trust? You know, if you've got a company who's been compromised, and their update policy or their update supply chain is prompting you to update to potentially load even more rat or malware or monitoring or whatever it is, that's just spreading more malicious content inside of your network. And, you know, I mean, I know we keep harping about it, but this is SolarWinds just in a different channel, right? So it's just so bad. I mean, we see IOCs around this stuff all the time. It's, you really got to know who to trust. And unfortunately, you know, these things are really hindsight 2020. Yeah, we should have known, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of cybersecurity and, you know, IT, MSPs, whatever, you go in thinking you can trust certain vendors and then you get this type of shenanigans. And who do you trust? Who
no one.
Can you put? So when you're looking at password management, you're looking at documentation, you're looking at all these things.
I think when you're looking at any piece of software or hardware these days, you need to look past the marketing fluff, the buzzwords and the jargon. You need to get a call with their CISO. And if their CISO doesn't have time for you, you shouldn't have any time for them.
This is true. Yeah, and we're not saying the CEO, folks. We're talking about the CISO itself, Chief Information Security Officer. So if they can't have real security conversations with you and answer your questions, or at least, I mean, we get a little lucky with some of the leverages that we pull. We can get right to CISOs with a lot of companies and have these conversations. But, you know, you've got to get out of the sales cycle. You got to have these higher level conversations. It's more than, you know, hey, I have these many devices, what's my price type thing? Or I have these many users, what's my price?
The issue I see in our channel is that you got a lot of these liberal arts salespeople trying to sell tech. You ask them a technical question. Oh, I'll get back to you on that. You never get an answer, but you get an email saying, hey, are you ready to buy yet?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, come on. You owe me answers to my questions and you can't even provide that to me.
Exactly. You know, we've had several demos with products and I would literally call up the company within a couple of hours because I found an exploit or I found this or I found that, just to test what they've done. And
you did that on a demo with me and a platform. And this guy was selling CMMC compliance, and his product was far from it.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I mean.
A good laugh, though.
Yeah, when you start having, it's like, so, hey, timeout sales guy, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? I mean.
Well, you know, that goes back to my thought that a lot of these applications weren't built to secure your data, right? A lot of these applications were just built to get your money. And that's the reality of the situation of application development in general.
Exactly. You know, and it's, you know, we talked about it before. I'm not sure if it was actually on this show, on our show or not, but, you know, definitely privately, where it just seems like a lot of companies are doing the whole pump and dump. You know, they're building up a platform, whether it's hodgepodge and put together and, you know, like a flying gas can with enough fluff to make you feel like things are good, but it's really not. It's just don't know who to trust anymore, you know? And I've really been burned, you know, I'm a little jaded. I'm definitely not trying to get in that position where I start calling out vendors, even though I may want to here before the end of this episode.
I'm so pro calling them out. I don't care.
You know, so, okay, well,
you know, we're not sponsored by anyone, so we can give our opinion, you know, if freedom of speech is still even a thing.
Now let's, well, we're not on those other platforms, so we're good.
Self-publishing means we can say what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing about zero trust, you know, I know you and I have an affinity for it and trying to get with vendors that actually do it, but there's no accountability for vendors who claim zero trust. And worse, there's no recourse against these vendors for failing to provide what they said they did.
And here's one of the biggest problems. How do you prove they have zero trust or zero knowledge?
Wait for DarkSide to pop them and put your info on their onion page?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so we were actually, I had just originally, you know, need to make a correction because I think we said this on one of the last previous episodes that, you know, I thought DarkSide was MIA.
But, everyone did.
You know,
they released their decryptor in January. And I think they gave it maybe Bitdefender, one of these guys. And now they are back double extortion ransom. They are looking to short stocks. They are, you know, they're doing multi-threading. I mean, these guys are on a rampage.
Yeah, so what they were originally doing, even when I was on their DarkSide leak page that I have here, they had little pins right here. So they had a bunch of these guys, you know, pinned at the very top. It was back in February. So if I scroll down here a little bit, these guys right here were all part of, you know, we had Swift Real Estate Partners. We had Pain and Fears that was part of there. All these companies were pinned to the top. For some reason, DarkSide on their page was showing these guys as a higher priority for whatever reason. I'm not sure why, but, you know, they were definitely keeping these things pinned, and underneath the pin, they were actually having the new releases. Like just last week, they did Smile Brands Inc. and Carolina Eastern, where a lot of these manufacturing companies are getting, you know, popped. You know, we actually had a two cases last week that came in from DarkSide, and on the top of their negotiation page where you find out how much Bitcoin you got to pay and everything, they straight out do not like Coveware anymore.
I wonder why.
So I wondered why too. I've always heard of Coveware. I've always heard of their existence and their reputation in the industry. And
well, we know a managed services provider that's pretty large out there. And by large, they've got over 25,000 endpoints under management. And one of their directors said they use Coveware all the time when their clients get popped, which I don't know what's scarier. The fact that their clients are always getting popped, or I don't know. But anyway, sorry.
So from my understanding, Coveware is a bunch of former FBI guys and gals, and they literally will string DarkSide out as far as it can go until they can confirm that a decryption has been made, or not, until a recovery has been made or whatever. And they don't need that negotiation anymore. And, you know, then they's like, oh, well, whatever, be done. But in the true art of ransomware remediation, I don't know how they got to find out it was Coveware, unless they were publicly saying, hey, we're Coveware and F you, or because DarkSide does have the ability where you can actually go in here to the press center and actually register as a remediation company. And you can supposedly get discounts or whatever, but you know, you can be able to register as one of those type of companies.
So in they're DarkSide. Affiliating the recovery as well. Brilliant.
They could be.
Right up until the DOJ gets a hard-on for that.
Mm-hmm. So it's really, really interesting, you know, what DarkSide is doing, to the point that they are quite literally starting to, you know, short stocks. They are getting to, you know, say, okay, well, we're going to start doing this, we're going to start doing that. And hey, insurance brokers, before we release it, just let you know, this is kind of what's going on. This is who we're getting ready to drop.
That's going to be, the SEC is going to have a hard time halting trading and reeling back money that was made.
Mm-hmm. And what's going to, you know, it's going to be a real bad situation to deal with.
How active is DarkSide these days?
Very active. Very active.
So what's going on in your neck of the woods with QLocker?
So this is a ransomware that really came out of left field that really took a lot of people by surprise. A bunch of QNAP devices that were subject to vulnerabilities got brute forced and then fully encrypted. So they used a program called 7-Zip to go through, find all the files, and then put a password on them and hold it for about anywhere between $500 to $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. And it looks like these guys and gals went through an entire weekend and at last count that I heard compromised over 7,000 NAS devices.
Wow. I saw a report that they did about $260,000 in 5 or 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad haul.
It's not a bad haul at all. Makes you kind of wonder why we're on this side of the fence sometimes. I joke kiddingly, but it's interesting to see how subjective people really are and how fast a threat actor can really move.
Well, if you consider what's on a NAS, it's usually people's music that they downloaded illegally anyway, and they need to keep because they don't want to go through that hassle again, and pictures. I can't mm-hmm. imagine personal NAS devices having much of anything else on it.
No, most of it is for external storage for whatever, whether it's a Plex server, some multimedia function or whatever. I mean, I don't even know if NASs are really good for pictures and home videos. I mean, whether you have a OneDrive or
I use Apple Cloud.
Gmail account. Yeah, Apple Cloud.
With the iPhone, they've got boom. It's on all my devices and you go to town, mm-hmm. share it easily with family. I don't know about you, but I've been on the iPhone for a long time. And when I see green bubbles for text messages, I'm like, I don't want to text you anymore. Get yourself an iPhone. The snobbery.
The snobbery, yes.
So did you take a look at the Babook ransomware group and the Washington, D.C. Police Department, as well as the Houston Rockets getting breached?
No, actually, I haven't, to be honest with you. It's been on my radar that I want to get caught up on, but what do you know so far?
So far, the Washington, D.C. Police Department had about 250 gigabytes of data exfiltrated by Babook. And as of about a week and a half ago, they were given 3 days to get in touch to arrange for payment, or the ransomware group was going to send the data to the gangs, which included confidential informants, undercover agents, and basically blowing up every single undercover operation they had going on. What's worse is that in their statement, in their letter, Babook made a direct shot against the FBI, CISA, and the United States, which really leads me to believe this isn't about the money. This isn't about anything other than an attack on the heart and minds of America to shake our faith in government and to shake our faith in law enforcement's ability to protect us. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, it just really goes back to when this really goes to back to me thinking about the whole Ashley Madison debacle that happened several years ago, some of the other Match.com and some of the other ones that this isn't, they use the cover of ransomware, but this is pure out fucking extortion. No way about, no two ways about it, right? I mean, it's either you pay or we are not only just going to do your name and shame on our site, we're going to start reaching out to people and letting people know what the hell went on and really expose you.
I think it goes deeper than that. I think this is about breaking our resolve as a nation, because a lot of these attackers are given safe haven and other protections by nation state APTs. So by getting into our police departments, they're showing us nothing is safe. You know, kinetic warfare was interesting because you had to be face to face, or you had to be able to be targeted by an aircraft, a missile launch system, or something. These guys can literally be sitting in our neighbor's house,
yeah,
launching attacks. You know, geo-blocking doesn't work anymore. We saw that as evident as it was with SolarWinds. You know, these guys are, dare I say it, these ransomware operators are more familiar with our compliance standards than those charged with enforcing them. What type of failure do you think CGIS had here? And to be fair, I'm not saying, let me rephrase that. I don't think CGIS failed. I think the implementation of CGIS controls by that department failed. And I'll give you one guess why.
MFA or maybe non-segmented networks.
All of the above, I would assume, but more so, I think that is the problem you run into when you deal with self-attestation for compliances.
This is true.
I'm willing to bet the DC Police Department does not have the level of auditing and logging enabled as prescribed by CGIS.
When's the last time you actually heard of a true CGIS audit?
I know a couple of guys that do them, and they laugh because they enjoy the fact they collect the money for just a self-attestation. And their excuse is, well, we do everything we can do. Local PD doesn't want to spend the money, so we can't do anything.
But see, aren't they supposed to be getting cut off from federal resources when they don't do compliance properly?
They are supposed to have their systems cut off from CGIS. Mm-hmm. So no access to NCIC and other such things like that. But who's enforcing this? Are you going to... Let me ask you a question. What politician or what agency is going to knowingly cut off a local police department from being able to run background checks on people they stop in a traffic stop that could potentially save a cop's life?
I'm not going to comment further because I can go uber political on this one.
I'm trying to keep political, you know, out of it, but in the sense, like, are you going to put one person in danger by cutting off their access? Forget that they're a cop. Forget everything that's going on in the newspapers. Are you going to risk that person going to harm's way?
No, but you know, why is this not more like the food restaurant industry to a degree with DHEC? You get a food inspector that comes inside of your building. They write you up on a couple of violations and they give you a certain amount of time to comply. FDIC, I don't have any FDIC clients myself, but I know some security folks that are in that space. And from the stories that I've heard, they have the same thing. They have a compliancy window. You have to meet you've got to resolve these things or you're cut off.
That's because of the fines involved. I don't think that you have any fines in the CGIS world. I think you have the ability to get cut off and you go, you fix it. They turn it back on. You probably get slapped on the wrist or spanked, but there's no real accountability and there's no recourse from, I think FBI is the one that oversees CGIS, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure.
It's abysmal, the state of CGIS secured systems or CGIS control systems, I think. And the Florida public defenders were breached by ransomware earlier this month.
Mm-hmm.
And the Illinois Attorney General, their office was breached by ransomware this month. And there you go. It's right there. And there were data dumps. Are these CGIS failures? I don't know because they're public defenders, but I'm sure they have access to court systems, and court systems are probably or should probably be under CGIS, I would say. I don't know.
I think there's departments of the court system that are supposed to be under CGIS, yes. I don't think the entire court system is under CGIS.
But I'm pretty sure the Illinois Attorney General systems would be CJIS related.
Yeah.
With what they prosecute. But going deeper into Babouk, it's that direct shot that they made against the FBI, CISA, and America. To me, that just screams APT funding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it's, when are we going to get to a point in our country where people are going to actually start taking security seriously? I mean, if you think about, you know, back in the good old days when our grandpas were around, you know.
Are we talking about Pappy here?
Yeah, Pappy. Where you can unlock your door or leave your door unlocked while you go do your errands in town, right? You know, that whole we live in a country type of mindset, and, you know, people are, the locks were there just to keep honest people honest. But now it's more of a, I think it's more of a complacency where it's the whole three monkeys mentality where see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. When it comes to their own little world, they, unless it rocks them, they don't give a shit. And that's scary.
I also think they don't give a shit because they've been desensitized. Every week you have two or three major breaches and people are saying, okay, if the government can get popped with SolarWinds, who am I? If Pulse Secure can get the government popped again, who am I? If Code Cove can get popped for code signing, who am I? If Password State can get popped via supply chain and leak everyone's password, again, who am I? So
Mimikatz, you know, I mean, we can go.
Mimikatz has been blowing up since they destroyed Emotet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just waiting for Emotet Part 2 or some version of it to come about.
Oh, you just put that out in the universe. Thank you.
Hey, it's what it's going to be. You know, people are going to say, no, no, no. Dude, they move faster than we do. Mm-hmm. And they move 1,000 times faster than our legislation. So, you know, I don't see the point to saying we've always done it this way. Let's keep doing it that way, because that's not going to be good for anyone.
Well, that's the definition of insanity.
There's a lot of insanity out there, man. Tremendous amounts of insanity.
Yep. Just crazy. It really, really is about where we are. You know, it does. You know, I know we, you know, I don't want it to be all doom and gloom and everything like that. And, you know, ransomware this or ransomware that. But I just, I really worry about people and I really worry about the businesses. You know, you take the cybersecurity things that have been going on, plus, you know, just the whole political garbage around COVID, you know, whether you're there or you're out of the office, you know, and people are employed, people are unemployed. And, you know, the whole, the way the world is so upside down, no, everybody is so divided now more than anything else. I think it's really easy to really drive a wedge into companies using the tactics like this. You know, you,
well, you're on the incident response side. I mean, that's where you've transitioned to. It's where you spend most of your time. What's the uptick in your business like? Without getting into specifics, of course, but yeah. Are you busy? Are you not busy?
I'm turning away work. I have to refer work out right now. Exactly. We are that busy.
And are you busier now than you were 12 months ago?
Yes. You know, I would not turn away work 12 months ago. I would be able to make it work in our time schedule and move heaven and earth. But just to get this podcast put together, we had to balance the schedules around a little bit, right? Yeah. So things are crazy.
And you know, that's my point. Things are crazy because there's so many companies and so many providers out there that play off each other's synergy to not do the right thing in terms of setting up a good security baseline.
Yeah, I mean, even in the IT MSP space, you know, we make comments about it all the time about the whole pizza tech and all that stuff. But how many people are in these Facebook groups like, hey, I'm just starting out. What should my stack be? What should I be doing? Really, you know, how about go work for a company for a couple of years and see what they're doing?
But they don't have to because they can go buy a laptop, go to SolarWinds, ConnectWise, Datto, any number of vendors and say, hey, here's my $50, sell me something.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're an MSP, ITSP, TSP, whatever acronym we're using these days. And they're an IT provider.
It's sad. It really, really is.
And, you know, you have companies out there who have no concept of what needs to be done for incident response. I mean, you know this better than most. Mm-hmm. How many MSPs have you seen completely butcher the IR by rebooting VMs, not copying, not cloning what's in memory? Makes yeah. your job near impossible.
Mm-hmm. If there hasn't been proper logging set up beforehand and devices have been rebooted, there's no memory forensics.
Hey. If you set up logging and auditing after the fact, you're okay. What nonsense that only snake oil are you talking about here?
That only works in Microsoft 365.
But how many people actually have auditing? In your IR, how many people have auditing turned on their 365 tenancy?
Even in 365, less than 10%.
And how many of those people are backing up their 365 tenants?
Almost none.
That's my biggest concern. Everyone thinks Microsoft is backing it up. Okay, I'm sure they are. There's redundancies built in. What happens if 365 shits the bed and can't come back up? Where are your emails? Where are your contracts? Where's everything you saved in that Microsoft Azure 365 environment?
You know, exactly. And, you know, we've had this conversation where I like to scare some of our, you know, inner circle folks, you know, whether you are with LabTech or now ConnectWise, sorry, old LabTech guy, but you know, if you're
same
with Ninja,
RC, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. If you're with Ninja or Synchro or Datto or whatever, what happens if their data center blows up? I mean, granted, they're down. You can limp along and you'll be okay for a couple hours. But what happens if you're down for 12 to 24 hours? What about your password management?
You go onto Reddit, you start and bitch and complain.
But that doesn't get your work done.
No, but that's what the MSP will do.
Nah, true. But, you know, there's got to be a local repository. You've got to be able to, a way to be able to pivot and do what you got to do, you know. And that, you know, I know I went a little squirrely for a little bit and just took the conversation complete left-hand turn.
That's what we do.
You know, to kind of circle back, it's like you got to have that logging. You got to have that redundancy. If something happens, you know, what is your you know, incident response? And we're not just talking about cybersecurity. I mean, expand it out more. What if I went over there and cut the cable lines coming into your building, and it's going to take Comcast, Cox, whoever your cable provider is, to come out there and repair it a day or two? Do you have failover backup? What if I come over there and throw your main breaker on your building and just shut your business down?
Well, let's take that another step further. Of all the IR you do, how many companies actually have backups that you can rely on to bring them back?
Some of them have some form of backup. Now, my definition of reliable is going to be different than others. You know, a reliable backup means that I can get any and all pieces of my data in under 24 hours, maybe 48. Okay. But yeah, I'm going to throw a little shade here. We've got one that's going on right now in California that they use SolarWinds backup for their exchange. Time out. Don't say anything bad about exchange. We won't go there. But
is it SolarWinds or is it Enable backup at this point?
It's SolarWinds backup. Well, I guess it's now Enable, but
okay.
For just their exchange database, they have just under a terabyte of data. Two data stores, roughly 300 employees. It'll take a while to guess how long it's going to take to download that data.
3 days, 4 days.
2.5 fucking weeks.
And it's stored at the SolarWinds /Enable data centers?
Mm-hmm.
Is it on-prem exchange?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you don't have the limitation of the 365 restore.
Mm-mm.
Oh, wow.
And if the Enable will be happy to put it on an external drive for you and ship it to you for a low, low cost of $1,300 plus shipping.
Oh, plus shipping.
Okay. Plus shipping.
Okay.
You don't even get the courtesy of overnight.
Are they going to encrypt it or they're just leaving it unencrypted?
I don't know.
And SolarWinds at its best. But that goes into another conversation that we should touch on, RPO and RTO. You know, what time frame is SolarWinds, Enable, or whatever their incarnation is? What are they selling to people? Because you and I know MSPs love buying on price. So they're getting these dirt cheap quotes for what? A 2 week restoration time?
Exactly. Yeah, there's, when I had this conversation with them, I flat out asked them, I said, okay, you got this much data. When's the last time you tried to do a disaster recovery? Never really. You know, you've had this solution in place for how long? About 2 years. Okay. This is your own fault.
I take it they've never tested the data, the backups either.
Nope. So we don't even know if it's good. They're still downloading data.
And this is, okay. So they can do a restore that's corrupted and never boots, or an Exchange mailbox restore that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So you may be talking to me around Wednesday and I may become bald because I'm just over here just going,
So what's the alternative here? What do you do in a case like this? Do you just get them up and running with your preferred solutions that you've tested, that you've vetted, and you know are reliable within these parameters?
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're going to have the conversation about later today or tomorrow. It's like, look, you know, you're going to have to go to these solutions. You've been out of email for 2 weeks now, roughly, because they were down for about a week before they got in touch with us through a third party. And, you know, we started going in last week with another incident response team that does a lot of the containment and stuff like that. And they got to get something out. You can't just keep having your clients email you to your personal Gmail accounts.
Well, have they considered setting up a new server to get incoming mail, some kind of email security gateway that will give them that, you know, business continuity email setup?
If they had any more physical boxes, they would do it.
You know who's got a physical box in a virtual manner? Google and Microsoft. I mean, you could, I mean, not you, but they can literally have something spun up within a couple hours to at least continue mail flow and communication.
Yep. Do something.
Now, here's an interesting question for you. Can you restore that on-premise Exchange data with SolarWinds to Microsoft 365?
Not with their current setup, no.
Interesting.
Because it was file system backup. It was not VM or files or system state or anything.
So it's a bare metal.
No, it's not even bare metal. It's, I want this folder, this folder, this folder, this folder, this folder, file system backup.
Oh, wow. I really want you to write a book about this kind of shit so I can read it. Because it would be fantastic and entertaining.
I don't know if I could do a book. It'd have to be more of these videos.
I think it would have to be a fictionalized-ish type of book for legal purposes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, what?
Because even this one, I'm teetering on attorney client privilege type of stuff. Like, I should be able to say that.
Well, you're not giving anything identifiable about this band of idiots. What was their IT department like? Internal, outsourced?
All internal, to the best of my knowledge. I think they may have had an external helping them out with doing some things.
Okay.
But it wasn't like a co-management situation. I think it was just an a la carte, hey, come in and help us do this. Hey, come in and help us do that type of thing.
How big is the internal team?
It's under 10.
Okay. And over 50, over 100 user?
Over 100, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So they're big enough to have used actual solutions and not some janky hodgepodge of bullshit that they probably did.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the next steps for them? Are you going to just rip and replace it and say, listen, assholes, do it my way?
Yeah. Once our partner gets done with assessing the containment side of things.
Okay.
Then they, just because of the nature of the client and how big they are and how overstretched, we definitely wanted to use an outside vendor that we're comfortable with to help us do the containment side, even though we can do it.
Okay.
But like I said, they've got a little bit more resources and they're a little bit of a heavy hitter. But once we get the handoff from the containment and their recommendations, which I'm pretty sure I already know what it's going to come back with just from our experience, but then it's going to be nuke, pave, redo.
Gotcha. So is this where you go in with a whole new cybersecurity posture for them?
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to look like? You know, not vendor wise, but feature wise.
I mean, it's going to be with these particular folks that I would definitely be doing anything compliant with the, you know, NIST 800, maybe .53 or .50 or whatever. I mean, they don't need the full CMMC, but, you know, definitely, you know, disaster recovery that's been tested every 6 months, that they got proper 2FA, they got proper firewalls, that when you're licensed with IDS and IPS, you actually have them turned on.
What, just buying a license doesn't automatically turn it on?
That you would think, but no.
That's such bullshit.
But I bought the freaking license.
You know, I bought the gas for the car. I didn't know you had to put it in too.
Now I got to start the damn thing? What the hell's wrong with this? That actually reminds me of a joke. I'll go a little squirrel on you. I seen a video where a dude had a generator in the back of his car. They would put gas in the generator to charge up the Tesla car as they were driving around. So it was just like,
man, you live long enough, you get to see everything. So what are your thoughts on cybersecurity actually being flexible?
It does need to be flexible, right? There is a line where productivity and security have to meet.
Right.
I can't go into a construction company. You know, those who know me, I did electrical and AutoCAD stuff for many, many years, but well, not AutoCAD. I was getting ready to do electrical engineering, but I was a Sparky for many, many years. But you can't go into any trades company and start dictating that everybody has MFA. You can't dictate that everybody's got biometric.
I would like to defer. I walk into my plumbers, my electricians, my contractors, and they get the same type of security as my hedge funds. And they say thank you because that's what I'm selling them.
Now, and those are rare contractors.
These are guys who do big business and understand the value of IT and the role IT plays in having them make more money.
There is a big key right there. That's the other flip side of the coin. You know, you go to a general contractor that's a custom home builder, may do 20 homes a year just because he's custom home doing in the ritzy part of town. And to have a lifestyle business, that's all he needs to do.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to impose all those things on that type of individual.
You know, that's where managed services and time and material really come into play in my business. When I go to someone, I try to offer them the managed services side because it's profitable for me and it's good for them. And if they can't see that value, I will not discount my rates or play, you know, let's make a deal. I'll tell them flat out, I'll sell you what you want and I'll charge you. I'll do T&M for everything else because I can't put them on a managed plan if it's not going to be my way. But this brings me to an interesting thought exercise I'd like to do with you maybe one day. Why don't we build our own compliancy?
I need beer.
We can do that. I think there are services that allow you to deliver beer across state lines. Or I'll call someone local to you and say, hey, you know, take it for Eric.
Yep, just right here.
I don't know if they allow it to be put into IVs, but, you know, we can figure it out. Keg stands. But what I want to do is I want to build a compliancy that is an amalgamation of the shit show and dumpster fire that is HIPAA, CJIS, NIST 800-171, CMMC. But I want to make different levels. So depending on what you need is what level you would be. And then we can map those compliances to the other ones for the controls. So it's not that we're actually reinventing the wheel. I think we're just reorganizing it.
To match our particular client base, yeah. Well, and I think that would really go within to the CMMC different levels.
Have you seen level one and two?
Yeah, I mean that's below even a pizza tech.
Do you really think anyone in the defense industrial base should be a level one or level two?
No.
God, no. Not with the threats that we're seeing right now. I mean, you posted something over the weekend in our private Slack that just triggered me. and that was the inflation that we see coming.
Oh, yep. It's the next year is at least is going to be interesting to see.
Oh, man, I think we're already starting to see the repercussions. We're seeing, I don't know about you, but it's hard to get laptops. It's hard to get desktops.
Mm-hmm.
Vendors are putting limits on how many we can order in a 3 month or 1 month span. So what happens if a large client comes up on a hardware refresh cycle? Are we supposed to order five at a time for the next 10 years?
I honestly think so. We're going to have to start carrying stock.
I don't want to do that. I got into this business, so I don't have to carry stock.
I mean, you've got CPU mining for Monero. You've got GPU mining. Everybody is trying to get, including myself, just to be transparent, you know, trying to get that last bit of Ethereum mining that you can get. Now there's one of the torrent sites. I can't remember if it was the Pirate Bay or one of them, but they're coming out with a cryptocurrency miner for hard drives, or they have one of the two.
Okay.
And that's getting to start to come out. So whatever, I mean, just whip out your freaking computer and start mining, doing whatever you want to do.
I've seen video cards create a high demand in the marketplace for computers because people are just buying it for the cards, cannibalizing, and now you're putting it back onto eBay or whatever the sales process is. So that's going to last for at least the next couple of years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what else?
I think that's it for the day. I mean, we got a lot talked about. I know we got a lot in the pipe to talk about potentially later this week, and I think it'll be some good conversations coming up here soon.
All right. You want to take us out?
Sounds good.
Go for it.
Well, thanks again, everybody, for tuning in for another podcast. Hope you did enjoy it. Please, 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 if you like it, please share it with somebody that you know and you love that you're concerned about their security. Please like, subscribe, tune in to every week as we are trying to build awareness and hopefully make you laugh a little bit with our banter. Until next time, enjoy your week.
Thank you all. Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.